Wow, thank you very much. I've never had an intro like that. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be part of this wonderful series and a great topic of our time. Thank you, John, for the intro. When he was asking who was new, I suspected that he wasn't speaking about me, so I didn't raise my hand as I'm new. Muslims start all talks, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. And this is how we start our talk today. A little intro about myself. As John mentioned, I grew up here in Santa Barbara pretty much all my life. My family immigrated here from Afghanistan during the Russian-Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So I grew up here as a young boy in second grade in Santa Barbara. And recently saw one of my third grade teachers still there at Adams Elementary. So I feel very much a Santa Barbaran, and I've grown up here all my life. And I think it's helped me when I became the Imam of Santa Barbara Mosque about 4 years ago to relate to the town that I grew up in, the people that I was raised with. In the Quran, it says that every prophet was sent to his own people speaking their own language. There has to be a type of ability to relate to people and feel for them and understand them. A lot of times many imams are imported from overseas and other countries, so they lose the cultural aspect that is very key and important and part of what we'll speak about compassion. Understanding one's culture is very key to having compassion. And we will speak about this. This is a very broad subject. So in this first part, what I will do is present to you what Islam says about compassion and mercy. And after the break, we'll have plenty of time to ask whatever questions you like about any topic if you wish. We can either do that through the microphone, or if you feel comfortable, you like it, write it down. We can also do that as well. So we'd like to start in speaking about compassion. Is this okay? Is it loud? Okay, very good. As I understand, one of the translations of compassion that we have, as Karen Armstrong talks about, is being understanding for others' sufferings. This is a very important aspect. We mentioned the golden rule, and I'm sure it's been mentioned here in the series before, but I'd like to bring it up again. Do unto others what you would have them do unto you. This echoes the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in a saying of his that treat humanity as you would love to be treated. And all the traditions of the Prophet Muhammad are collected in separate sayings than the Quran, which Muslims believe to be the speech of God in first person, but that his sayings are in a separate collection. This saying is found in the collection of Imam Tabarani. And there is an axiom in Islamic law that they come down to five major fundamental aspects of the religion. Its purposes, or its what they call in Arabic, maqasid. One of these are la darara wa la dirar. Do not harm and do not reciprocate harm. This is one of five foundations of the religion. As I speak, some of you might wonder, is he a Muslim? What Islam is he talking about? So you might find some of this to be shocking, some of it to be new, some of it to be perhaps not authentic to the tradition, but it is very much authentic. As authentic to the religion as Rumi was to this religion. In order for us not to harm humanity and not to harm others, this comes from being educated about other people's cultures, as we mentioned. We have, for example, what we saw in the news and sparked a lot of outrage when the Quran copies were being burned. Whether it was in my country, Afghanistan, or whether it was here in America, one of the cultural aspects for a lot of different Muslim cultures is to burn the Quran really is like burning the religion in their culture. Though technically, the way to get rid of an older copy of the Quran, one methodology is to actually burn it or to bury it. This is the two ways. Most scholars now would say shredding might be a good opportunity as well. But classically, this is how it was done. We must understand one another's culture. A lot of times we may have a scholar who comes and gives a lecture here in our community. Some of the cultures are very different from one another. We have a West African scholar who came and gave a lecture in our community, and my wife was surprised why he was teaching laying down, leaning down. I said, this is their culture. This is how they teach. It's an atmosphere of love. It's an atmosphere of relaxation. It's an atmosphere of just benefiting, however the posture may be. In my country, when you go to centers of education, you must have a certain type of comportment and etiquette. Otherwise, one is rebuked for that behavior. And many Muslim cultures tend to be like that. All cultures are different. Our understandings are different. How then are we going to be able to relate to having compassion if we're not sensitive to those aspects in a culture? And this comes from educating one another. It comes from a sincerity to learn from one another and learn about others. John mentioned a good thing which we'll talk about is generosity in our tradition. Though generosity is very big in our tradition, it varies in the cultures. As I mentioned, one of our blessed teachers from West Africa, if you visit his village, no matter who you are, it is part of their culture to sacrifice a whole lamb for your arrival. Doesn't matter who you are. And in some cultures in the old time, they might even give you someone to marry while you're there short time. This actually happened to my father-in-law, who was a director of movies in Afghanistan. He went to a village. They sacrificed the sheep for him. They were so kind to him. And then they told him, you must marry one of our daughters. So he said he saw her and she came and picked up an entire goat and walked off with it. He said, no, this is... she's. If I do anything wrong, she's going to have me. So a word I like to start with in the Quran is Ar-Rahman. This is one of the chapters of the Quran, the chapter number 55 in the Quran to be precise. And the Rahman comes from a word in Arabic which is Rahma, extreme mercy, compassion. This word Rahma could be used as mercy, but can also be used as compassion. And then this is the bulk of the material that I will cover. It deals with this word. Rahma, mercy, compassion. All the chapters in the Quran start with Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, with the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. There is a tradition that the Prophet Muhammad mentioned, that God mentions, separate from the Quran, that I have derived the name of the womb from my name, the most merciful, the most compassionate. And this is very similar to the Hebrew Jewish exact tradition as well. The word for womb in Arabic is Rahim. And the word for the name of God is Rahman. So that the name of the womb, which is the factory of life, as one of our teachers called it, the factory of life, the most honored of all places, the most peaceful, the gentle place, your first abode before this world, in a sense, is called the Rahim. And the Rahim indicates attributes of the Rahman, of the most merciful, because it's full of compassion and mercy and caring for the human being. All of us have been there. And a great spiritual sage, the great Imam Al-Ghazali, he mentions, although the womb was very comfortable and very nice, once you were born, no one wants to go back. He says, the same way when you leave this world, no one wants to come back. Except the one to come back and live a life for the sake of God in piety and righteousness. And there's other traditions that indicate that. Also, we have a verse of the Quran that says, inform my servants, O Muhammad. And again, as I mentioned, the Quran is something that the Archangel Gabriel read to the Prophet Muhammad. He simply heard it and repeated it. So it says, Nabbi ibadi, inform my servants that I am the most compassionate, the merciful. This is important because if we start thinking about the greatness of the Almighty and we start thinking about His power and everything else, sometimes it could overwhelm us in thinking we are not worthy to be standing in His presence or to call on Him. Or the things that we commit, we feel ashamed sometimes. How can I call on God if I've done this and this and that? But this is all part of who we are. And God is accepting all of us as we are and asking us to turn to Him in the Islamic tradition. There is a tradition of the Prophet Muhammad that mentions God has 100 parts of mercy. 99 He has saved for the next world, as Muslims believe in an afterlife in the next world. Of these 99, only one of the parts is allotted to the world. And if we see the compassion of a lot of traditions, if you see the compassion of the Buddhists, if you see the compassion of the Christians who try to embody the teachings of Christ, to love your enemy, even loving thy enemy, to be part of faith, it is something very phenomenal. If you see the love of the mother to the child and her compassion and mercy, that as soon as the child may cry, the mother may break out of her sweet sleep and rise to caring for the child. We see all this compassion of love and mercy and doing of good, that this all stems from that one mercy of God. That this is what He spread in the earth. So we're going to speak more and more about this. As I mentioned, Jesus, peace be upon Him, who is a prophet of Islam as well, and all the great people of God in Islam that are prophets, are free of sin, free of any type of evil thought, and they are embodiments, all of them, of compassion and mercy. As we have it in the Bible, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy, in His famous Sermon on the Mount. Listen to that and listen to a saying of the Prophet Muhammad and look how close it is. Ar-Rahimuna yarhamuhumur Rahman. Those that are merciful shall be receiving mercy from the most merciful. Irham man fil ard. Have mercy and compassion on those on earth. Yarhamukum man fis sama. You will be shown mercy from the heavens. This is actually the first saying of the Prophet Muhammad that is taught to the youngest children who study Islamic law, often at the age of 5, who are trained as scholars. One of my teachers, who has the shortest chain of narration to this saying of the Prophet on the planet Earth, with 23 people, back to the Prophet of 1400 years. Most of his teachers taught this at plus 80 years old to a 5-year-old who heard it, who then transmitted it, and it's the first saying that every scholar must learn in Islam. If you do not show mercy and compassion, you will not be shown it. That the whole of Islamic teaching is about compassion and mercy. And this is very similar to the Jewish faith as well. And I'm sure Rabbi Susan will be here, I believe, next week, and I'm sure she'll address that. So, show mercy, show compassion, and you will be shown compassion. One of the great sages of Yemen, who is a living scholar, one of the most beautiful of our time, a man of peace and love, and who travels the earth everywhere spreading this peace and love. And when he came to America, some friends of mine that were traveling with him, he wears a turban and he wears the thobes, and he has this outward look that sometimes could be frightening to people, unfortunately, because those that are have been deprived of a lot of compassion or using that similar dress. So he was traveling with different people of different cultures and different colors, and everyone was with him. And they said, "What are you guys doing?" He said, "We're on a tour." He said, "What are you touring about?" He said, "Spreading love and peace." The guy at the border, the American agent, the customs officer said, "Go ahead. This is what they're doing. We don't need any hatred being spread in the world. We need understanding and compassion, and we'll keep continuing to cover this." The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in one tradition, once saw a mother with a child taking care of her, and he said, "Do you think that this mother would ever take her child and throw her into a fire or hurt it. They said, never. He said, God is more compassionate to His bondsman than that mother is to her child. Giving us ideas that God's compassion for His creation, and I want you to remember all this because I'm going to tie all this into something very important. God's compassion for His servants is way more than any servant can have for one another. In a very beautiful tradition that is taught as well, a very sound, authentic saying of the Prophet Muhammad says, none of you believe. لا تؤمنوا لا يؤمنوا أحدكم. None of you truly believe. Although it says truly in the commentary, but literally it says, you do not believe. And believe in Arabic stems from a word that means to take safety by trusting and believing in God. So it's a type of iman, comes from aman. Faith comes from safety. You will not have safety with God. You will not believe in God unless you love for your brother or sister what you love for yourself. We hear this echoed in the other faiths. What is this love? Now, you might also wonder, as I do sometimes if I hear some traditions, love for your brother, but it could be a Muslim brother. Maybe they're talking about each other. Sometimes the neighbor could be, they were referring to the same faith. The greatest scholar and the commentator of the traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, his name is Imam Yahya bin Sharaf al-Nawawi, a scholar from the region of Syria, who I did visit when I lived in Syria in 2000, before all this chaotic mess that occurred. And I visited this great scholar's tomb and prayed for him. In his commentary, who's the greatest commentator of the traditions of the Prophet Muhammad, says that the brother or sister here is in humanity. That all the statements of the Prophet are general unless it is a reason to be specific. So no Muslim truly believes or has faith until they love for their brother or sister what they love for themselves. And this is a very important point. So that the purpose of the Muslim's life becomes one of love and compassion. Because this is what God has ordained or has put him with the purpose or her on this planet Earth. In another tradition it says, none of you believe until you love one another. And shall I not teach you something that will spread that love? And they said, sure. He said, greet one another with peace. In fact it says, أَفْشُ السَّلَامْ بَيْنَكُمْ. Spread salam. And you might have heard this salam. You know, this is the way that Jesus greeted His companions. Peace be upon thee. What is this peace? Happiness, joy, free of worry, stress, becoming whole. This is another way of salam, peace. May you be happy and whole and tranquil. All of this is a prayer every time one meets one another, which is an amazing embodiment of practical compassion. Peace be upon thee. I pray for peace for you. This is, and also what the Prophet could have meant is, spread love and peace, not hatred between you. And in the Quran, it talks about not spreading hatred, slander, backbiting, because these lead to one disliking another, one hating one another. And this is something that we should never do. I might want to say at this point that the teachings of Islam really come down to pleasing God. That this is the purpose of our life on earth, is being recipients of His compassion and mercy. So there's a lot of what I read has to do with practicality. Putting this into practice. Doing it yourself. Because although we are flesh and bone and we're human beings, and in Islam, the human being is the highest of what God created, even above the angels. But the same human being has a potential of reaching lower than the lowest. And this is what the Quran says. We created humans in the best of stature, then we raised them to the lowest of the low. So we have this incredible area of potential. And this is what Islam is calling for to us, is having that highest potential of compassion. Because since God created us, we have been designed to have a type of perfection in our character, but something stops us on the way. And this is part of what I'll get to later. Something stops us from having mercy and compassion, which is our egos. The ego. And in Islam, the branch of this category that deals with the heart and spirituality is Sufism. This is the concern of Sufism, is the ego. And I like to quote Rumi, since we mentioned him, that once Rumi tells a story of a man who went to a door and knocked to go in. And it was asked, "Who is it?" And Rumi said, "I." And the door was not opened for him. And he went away. And another time he came, knocked and said, it was said, who is it there? He said, "You." And it was opened for him. And so the I in Islamic spirituality, you must get not see that and be lower to yourself. You must move beyond yourself. This is the I, capital I, of duality in the creation, which if you want to achieve perfection with God, you must lose your ego. It is the ego, it is the bad elements of our potential of ourself that stop us from being receivers of mercy and compassion and giving mercy and compassion. And even as Karen Armstrong mentions, this is something we work on our entire life. This is not something we're going to cure, or I claim I've cured standing up here as a spiritual leader. I do not consider myself as a spiritual leader. I consider myself to be probably the worst of the Muslims in town, somehow got to be the imam. Because when we come to the Almighty, we must come humbly. We must come not with our egos, and then this we attain true understanding and true gnosis of God. In the Quran, to tie up us as humanity, there's a beautiful verse that says, "O humanity, we made you into tribes and nations that you may know one another." And this is exactly what John started his talk with, that we're here to know one another. And I was so happy he mentioned that, because that's a verse of the Quran. God created us into clans and tribes and nations and different languages and different colors. In the Quran it says, لِتَعَارَفُونَ. This is, I believe, in chapter 47 or 48. In order that you get to know one another, see each other's differences, and appreciate it, and help one another. Should someone come be a visitor, as we're asked, we have these gentlemen who are here today, actually here from Oxnard, the visitors. But we don't see the expansive, very big difference here in America. Maybe some of us might be sensitive if we go into some parts of America, we'll see that the accent changes a little. If we're in South Carolina, as opposed to Texas, as opposed to California, right? So we might pick up on subtle differences. In other places, you might drive 2 hours and you're in another country every two in parts of Europe. So that we see the differences. We help one another. We have compassion. And this is very important. So if we are from the same source, then why are we not treating each other as one big family? The Prophet Muhammad, he went to the heavens one of the nights in Islamic tradition in which he met all of the prophets. In fact, he met them in Jerusalem before his ascension to the heavens. And this comes from the idea that God's power, he showed him his power, that he can take you and take you beyond time and space and everything else. When he traveled, he went to Jerusalem and he met there all of the prophets. All of the teachers, all of the sages, all of the people who have behind them millions and billions of people who follow them. And throughout the heavenly travel, he meets different prophets, and all of them treat him and greet him with, "Welcome to a noble prophet and a generous brother." So that they're all brothers. And all of the prophets are brothers from our tradition, from Adam until the last. They're all in a tradition of brotherhood and sisterhood of humanity. In the Quran it says, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. We did not create the human beings, and the jinn were also a type of creation that exists on earth that we cannot see. We did not create you except to worship me, God. And the great commentator of the Quran, the cousin of the Prophet, says, to worship God meaning to know God. To know God is to know His creation. To know His creation is to love Him. Hence the point comes back to love and compassion. We cannot have compassion and feeling for others and treating others well until we understand our connections between one another. And again, this point comes up off and on again, that how are we all connected? In this same heavenly night trip that the Prophet took, he saw Adam. And he saw Adam who was looking to a group on the right and being so happy and pleased. And he looked to a group on the left and he was crying out of sadness. And he said, why is he doing that? He said, that those on the right are all of his children who have attained salvation and mercy from God. And those on the other side are those that did not receive that. And as a result, Adam was crying. So this shows if our great grandfather in the Islamic tradition is showing compassion and mercy and love and crying and having concern for all of those that did not attain it, this is an indication for us to also have a type of care and concern for all, the righteous and the sinner. Because in Islam, only God knows who are the sinners and only God knows who's the righteous, and they're hidden amongst His servants. No one knows their state. No one knows our rank with God except God. Therefore, in Islam, we are told to treat everyone better and see them greater than yourself. And this is one of the secrets of the great Sufi masters. Everyone that they met, they assumed them to be better than themselves. One of our teachers said, the certainty is that I've committed a wrong. The assumption is you've committed a wrong. Therefore, one must look and come to God with that. In the Quran, it talks about before the Almighty created this creation of humanity, He gathered them on a plain before this creation. And all the souls were gathered, not in body, but in soul. And He asked them, do you accept the responsibility of life? Do you accept this challenge? Do you accept this test? And they all responded, Bala, certainly, we bear witness. And this is shahidna. We all take testimony to this. We all bear witness. There is a collective response. And the Prophet Muhammad said that the souls are the marshaled armies of God. In other words, whoever meets one another in this world with the connection of the previous world will be at ease and comfort with each other. Sometimes we meet someone and you say, you know, I feel like I've known you all my life. Where have I seen you? And then you spend a long time. Do you work there? No. Where did you grow up? I don't know. I really feel like I knew you. And then you have so much in common. And this is not always with a fellow Muslim or a fellow Christian or a fellow Jew. It could be with anyone. It could be with anyone you really click with. And then you say to yourself, wow, we get along so well. Then there's others you meet you have a difference with. You don't exactly get along with so easily. Things are made difficult. And this is what the Prophet Muhammad said, whoever was close in that plane with one another, when they come in this world and get to meet one another, they understand and they're at ease with one another. And who is far in that plane are also far in this world and they have differences. So this also connects us to why do we have compassion for one another? Why does someone have compassion to a random stranger? Because they're not really strangers in reality. They are part of this family of humanity. They are part of those souls that were gathered on the plain as creations of God. And one of the beautiful things, one of the great Sufi scholars, he was a Sufi scholar, Ahmed Bamba of Africa, after French colonialists went in and he had no hatred in his heart, and they were impressed with his behavior. And they said, you know, a lot of these other people, they really hated the colonialists and they showed them, you know, they fought them and they did many things. Why were you not like that? He said, I see everything from God. Either we did something wrong, and this is what we get, or it's a raising of our degrees of showing patience and gratitude and being humble and just waiting out the tribulation. Perhaps it could be that. So since I saw the action was from God as a test, I didn't bear any hatred towards anyone. And this is the real Muslim. This is the real Sufi. And this is a person of compassion who forgave and had mercy on those who wronged them. And this is also very clear in the Quran, that if you forgive and you pardon, that's from the resolution of the top of God's creation, which are five, what they call them, the Ulul Azm, the great prophets of great resolution, which is Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus and Muhammad, these five. That forgiving and pardoning when you have the right to take action against, this is the higher road. And this is what will make you ascend onto the likeness on the path of Noah and Abraham and Moses and Jesus and Muhammad and so forth, peace be upon them. The Hajj, which is coming up in a week, the Islamic pilgrimage, and I've been blessed to go there 3 times so far. First, I went with some friends and my teacher, who was the imam here before. Second time, I had to take my mom because she said, "You better take me." And third time was just a straight gift from God. Somebody walked up and said, "I'll pay for your entire pilgrimage, go with me." I said, "I'm not going to say no to a bill that's costing me $7,000. Sure, sounds great. Going to Hajj is an amazing journey. And it's the journey that changed the mind of Malcolm X, a great civil rights leader. All of us know Malcolm X. His involvement with the Nation of Islam changed after his pilgrimage. When he came back, he said, "Black supremacy is wrong in religion. I just came back from the Hajj. And I saw in the pilgrimage every skin color, from the lightest of the light to the darkest of the dark." And in Hajj, you're not allowed to wear regular clothes. You wear 2 pieces of cloth, white cloth in fact. And they're, in our language, huge towels. And you cannot wear anything else. You cannot wear shoes. You must wear sandals. This shows your impoverishment before God and your equality before God. So that the prince or sultan or president of any country, whatever he is, he's also forced to dress like you and stand before God like you. And they're not looked at as being special other than their connection with God. And there's a tradition that says God does not look at your outward forms. He does not look at your appearances, but He looks at your heart and He looks at your action. That's only God can see. No one can see our action all the time. As you see me, you don't see my action. Only God sees my action. And I see you in this short time. I only could see you in the short time I'm with you, but the Almighty is always with you. So the Hajj, Malcolm came back and he spoke against racism and against supremacy, and he brought the true teaching of Islam. Actually changed his name from Malcolm to Malik al-Shabazz, which most don't even call him by that, but it was Malik al-Shabazz in his final transition and elevation of his humanity and of his understanding. So, another practice that Muslims have that shows our equality, that we should have compassion for others and not hatred, is when we pray. Whenever we line up in our prayer, Muslims pray 5 times a day, and particularly encouraged to pray in congregation. But on Fridays particularly, we have our gathering day. And one of the things that Muslims will do when they stand up to pray is they have to stand shoulder to shoulder, tight, and not leave any gaps. The Prophet said, leaving gaps is for the devil. What gaps is this? I don't want to stand next to this person because they're from this country. I don't want to stand next to this person because they're poor or they're rich or whatever it is. Stand as humanity in a single row, and don't make your rows curved. Make it straight so your hearts are in line, so that you entrain to the divine tone and that you're lined up in a way of attaining this great gnosis of your Lord and your purpose of creation. There is a verse of the Quran that I think is very key. It says, "وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ." We did not send you, O Muhammad. This "we" is a plural, royal "we," out of respect. It says, God says, "I did not send you, O Muhammad, except and only as a mercy, as compassion." And it says, "لِلْعَالَمِينَ," to all the worlds, to everyone. And we don't know all these worlds. What is all the worlds? So scholars say those are all the worlds we know, or the humanity and the others that share our creation, or share the planet Earth, excuse me. And all of the world. This compassion of the Prophet Muhammad was such that he showed Muslims and embodied this mercy towards, for example, the animals. Animals spoke to the Prophet Muhammad in the traditions. A camel once complained to him that my owner packs too much on me. Or perhaps it was a donkey that complained. My owner packs a lot. And he went to him, he said, you know, why do you put so much on him? Your animal has complained. Lighten his load because it has a right. Have compassion. This is the same. Have mercy for this animal. Different types of animals, different types of creation complained to the Prophet and asked that those are treated well. In the sanctuary of Mecca, for example, you cannot cut a tree. You cannot kill an insect. And I've been there, and you have to be very careful what you're doing in the sacred city. Of course, the whole planet is sacred, but more so particular areas so that you can train and understand things being sacred. Not cutting down trees, not killing animals, not fighting in those areas, etc. This is a very key point. The Prophet's mercy was so much that I like to look at some examples of how people treated him and how he encouraged others to treat them. In the Quran it says, "Idfa billati hiya ahsan." Repel that which humans wrong you, or repel evil with something that is better. So if we look at this Quran in conjunction, we look at the life of the Prophet Muhammad. There was a lady who used to every single day throw entrails of slaughtered animals on the way at the Prophet Muhammad every day when he passed by, because she did not like him. She did this for a long time. And if you study his life, and I recommend the book of Karen Armstrong on his life, because it's a very fair book. One wants to be fair and look at it from an outside perspective, from a fair scholar. If you look at his life, the first 13 years in Mecca, out of his 23 years of prophecy, was all taking blows, taking shots, people being very rude, people persecuting them, people trying to assassinate him, people trying to kill him. This was his life in Mecca. Yet the Quran gave no permission for fighting or even defending. It said, be patient, for that is better. It was only after he went to Medina and established a dominance that when others aggressed or tried to persecute them further, permission of defending was allowed, but not in Mecca. So that those 13 years in Mecca, those that were Muslims were the real Muslims. They were the highest of reward. They had the highest of reward and they had the highest of elevation because they had to deal with this massive persecution. One of the first immigrations occurred shortly for those who just couldn't take it, because they were actually being killed in Mecca by his tribe because of their belief that they had the audacity of saying there's only one God. So they were persecuted. And in this persecution, this lady used to do this every single day. One day she gets sick and the Prophet Muhammad goes and visits her. He walks in and she says, my God, what are you doing here? You're visiting me? Look what I do to you every day. He said, you're sick. You're not feeling good. I came to visit you. This is compassion. This is mercy. This is showing her that I only can give out good. And we have a tradition of Jesus, which he was walking. Somebody cursed. A good man came, greeted them, he greeted him with goodness. Then a person came and cursed him, and he greeted him with good. And a companion turned to him, he said, why did you do that? Because the first person was nice, you greeted him, and then the second, like you did that, you didn't have to do that. He said, every vessel only pours out what it has. Since I only have goodness, that's all I can give. So this is also our understanding of the Prophet Muhammad. He had nothing but goodness, compassion. In fact, the Quran warned him, be careful, because it's almost that you are killing yourself over worry and stress for your people. فَلَعَلَّكَ بَاخِعٌ نَفْسَكَ عَلَىٰ أَثَارِهِمْ. This is in chapter 18 in the Quran. That you're destroying yourself. You're almost withering yourself away because of your extreme care and compassion for your people. And this is every prophet that was sent must have compassion and love for his people. Otherwise, how will he guide them? How will he teach them? How will he have concern? How will he be the embodiment of God? When we see God's compassion in the earth, how can a prophet not embody that compassion? And how can those that claim to truly love and follow their prophet not be that embodiment of that mercy? And in Islam we say, to the extent of how much you've received God's mercy and compassion will be to the extent of how much you show it to others. So sometimes you might meet someone and say, this person is the most compassionate person you'll ever meet. And it's very true. We've all met very compassionate people. And some that stand out in our minds more than others. And when you look at how did they get this? This is God's manifestation of His compassion on that person. Of His mercy on that person. So that if someone is very merciless and wants to just harm others, we would say in the Islamic tradition that they're very deprived of the mercy and of the compassion of God. And they're very far from the prophetic teaching of the Prophet Muhammad. And I think we see this in the extremism elements that are happening in the Muslim world today. That they have lost really the sole main purpose of existence, which is mercy and compassion, not hatred and killing and murder, which often occurs to many, many other Muslims daily. Daily. Those that are suffering in Iraq, those that are suffering in Afghanistan. There's a suicide bombing this morning in Pakistan. Every single day. And you wonder, what religion are you following? Please don't claim it's Islam. Because Islam comes from salam, peace. Islam comes from istislam, surrender to God's will. If God is commanding you to be compassionate and merciful, how are you doing the opposite? And this is something the Prophet Muhammad warned us, actually said in the latter times, there will be people like this who will come. But they will not have the compassion and the mercy. The Caliph Omar said, you see those ants on the ground? I'll be questioned about them. I have a responsibility of compassion and care for even the ants. Even animals. Like, as Muslims, we just cannot eat any meat, for example. And often I just say kosher. It saves me a very long conversation if I'm in a hurry. I say, well, I eat kosher. Because sometimes I say I'm vegetarian. Then they'll see me eat something and they say, I tell you're vegetarian. Well, I can eat kosher. Then you say, you can eat kosher. So it's often a long conversation. This occurred recently at a Mexican restaurant I was at, and I asked the gentleman where they get their lamb from, and he said, I thought you're vegetarian. Now you're asking about lamb. The reason why is because we don't eat harmed animals. We eat only those animals that were treated with respect and mercy and given their rights and killed in a humane, most free of harm's way. That, in other words, they didn't suffer. And they're not product of just greed. Because Muslims have an understanding, you are what you eat. And this is echoed first by Ibn al-Qayyim 700 years ago. You know, sometimes you say, you are what you eat. He coined that in his book, the Book of Prophetic Medicine, 700 years ago in the 13th century of Islam. That what you eat affects your behavior. So this is very important. That not only are we caring about, if Islam is so strict about how we treat animals, and the mercy we show them, how much more for humanity? In fact, it says, for the holy house that Abraham built that Muslims pray five times a day towards, for it to be destroyed is more easier for God. He'll take that as it's less of a wrong than to kill a Muslim, than to harm someone. This is a very serious crime with God. The Prophet Muhammad, so this lady, she felt as he visited her, a change in her heart. And this is what happens with compassion. If we're compassionate towards others, we'll see their heart change automatically. Read a beautiful story the other day of a woman who was in a Starbucks trying to get coffee. I don't know if anybody read this. And there was a lady who just was so angry. And she told her, go. And they started getting in this fight about why she didn't go first, and there was exchange of words. Well, there was words and a lot of anger coming from the lady in the car. And the other one just looked and she just smiled and she went first and told the lady at Starbucks that, I want to pay for the drink of that other person. And after she paid for it, the other lady didn't take it and she was so angry. And she said, tell her when she comes that it's okay, I've forgiven her, and for her to have a nice day, and just take the coffee. And she pulled over to the side, and afterwards she said to her, thank you, and I'm so sorry. She goes, because this lady who had compassion on her, that she said, that was me a while back. You see, having compassion on others often stems from understanding them once again. Been there, done that. For me to meet someone who is not practicing, been there, done that. For me to see a Muslim who is lost, been there, done that, I will have a different outlook because I've been there. And Rumi, he says, any wrong you see in others is because it's inherent in you. So that you have to have compassion. If you don't have this, you're not going to change yourself, you're not going to change your family, and you're not going to change the world. And look at this beautiful practical example. Someone who did something wrong to this lady at Starbucks, she did the opposite. And this is what the story of the life of the Prophet Muhammad is constantly about. There was a man with a sword walking around the Kaaba, the holy house, circumambulating, and he wanted to kill him, and the Prophet Muhammad was told by the angel Gabriel, he has a hidden dagger and he wants to kill you. So he turned around to him, he says, Fudala was his name, he said, what did you just tell yourself in your mind? Because he was like, I'm gonna kill him as soon as he turns around. He said, nothing, messenger of God, he's pretending. He said, are you sure? He goes, yes. So he's walking. He goes, I'm going to take him now. He turned around. He said, what did you say? Tell yourself. Nothing. And here's a man trying to kill him. He could have turned around and said, you don't think I'm the prophet? And I wouldn't have known. The angel Gabriel told me. Companions, take him away. Instead, he turned around to him and he said, Fudala, come here. And he took his hand and he put it on his chest. And he made a prayer for him. And he said, Fudala said, in one moment he was the most hated person to me in the world. And in the next moment he became the most beloved. An act of kindness. If you show somebody, of course be careful how you practice this because it doesn't always work out. You might want to hug someone or do some act of kindness and they might get upset and say, what are you trying to do? You think you're better than me? Right? It could occur. So you have to use exercise wisdom. Use your judgment and be wise about it so I don't take any responsibility. The Prophet Muhammad was extremely merciful and compassionate with children. He never used to pass by children and just say, oh little children, just go and play. He would go and tap them on their head. And he said, whoever sees an orphan, if they pet them on their head and just, you know, show a gesture of compassion, God will reward them for every hair on that child's head. So he used to honor children by calling them by their fathers or their relatives' names. Oh, son of so-and-so. Oh, daughter of so-and-so. To honor them and their parent. Right? So this is something that was honorary. And it gave children a type of instillment of pride and looking forward to being like their father or their mother and being better even. So he always... And he said, whoever does not have mercy or compassion towards the youth and does not have respect for our elders is not from amongst us. Because with elders, you have to show respect. You have to show respect that they've been there and done that. You're 20 years old, you think you understand the world better than a 70 or 80 year old who's been there, done that? I don't think so. There's a type of respect you should show. And there's advice you can take. I often love to conversate with someone who's a lot older because I like to learn from their time, how they did things back in the 30s or 40s. There's a wonderful woman named Mary. She used to come to a friend of mine who has a gas station. He makes her breakfast every day. No one knows this. Now you know. He makes her a piece of bread and I helped him out because he was on a travel and she came in the morning and she said, you know, Muhammad makes me this every day. Are you going to do it for me? I said, of course I'm going to do that for you. So I make her a little piece of toast and we sit down and we were just talking as much as I can take from her wisdom. How it was in the 50s and 60s and the role of women and the role of men and marriage and dating and everything. Just so I can get the perspective of what it was like. And she says, today's people are just totally not, you know, the ideal that she saw. But there's wisdom. We must respect the elders. And you have to have compassion on the youth because they're going to mess up. You have children, you've seen that. You have to have mercy. Our children become our teachers. Because I have two kids, as John mentioned, 8 and 3, and they're tough. They definitely will test your compassion and mercy and tolerance and patience and everything else. But they teach us. They become our teachers. And they make us more spiritual. So scholars in Sufism write a lot about good qualities of children. And they're because they came from that divine presence we talked about earlier, they're very pure. They're very innocent. until they become from more of the angelic sense to a more flesh and bone and human element. The Prophet was extremely courteous with all people and connected all people to a sacred understanding. He had peace treaties with Jewish people. This is not true that he went and killed Jews. This is not true. They lived in peace and harmony in Medina. And this is demonstrated by Karen Armstrong as well. There was an issue of treason that took place, and it was not the judgment of the Prophet, but the judgment of the Jewish tribe with one of his companions that agreed to an execution that took place because of a treachery of war, that they were citizens and they turned on the government. And we see this even in our country. For a group of us to rise and want to do harm to our president and our country, this is not tolerated. That incident is taken out of place to say Muhammad killed Jews. Muhammad, in 23 years, 10 of which were wars, it is narrated in the Islamic traditions that he killed one person who was following him up a mountain with a sword, wanting to kill him after he was hurt, and I've been to the actual area, and he turned around and he killed that man, according to a narration, and some differed and said he didn't kill anyone. When the battles that he did fight defending, they said he used to fight and then he used to go run somewhere else and fight someone else. Just because he didn't want to kill them. He was just, it was such compassion, even in war. His cousin took this, and once a man spat on him and he didn't kill him. He said, if I kill you now, it's for my own ego and my own self. He walked away. Killing is wrong unless there is a purpose to stopping more strife and more killing. And then in that sense, if there's no other way out, then in that sense, that's what the Muslims did at that time. But this is taken in our time differently and exploited and brought into a huge misunderstanding of that he was out killing people. This is not true. 13 years, what those people did in Mecca, after 10 years in Medina, he went back to Mecca, victorious, on his horse riding in. And as he went in, all of the people of Mecca that had harmed him were now at his mercy. Because they came and he was victorious. Never had they seen 10,000 strong coming to a small tribal group. They came to him and he said, what do you think I'm going to do with you? And the tradition of the Arabs, when they came back, it was revenge, you were done. And they said, you're a generous man, son of a generous man. He said, I to say to you, imagine, I don't have time to explain what they did. They killed his relatives, they killed his family, they did so much. He said, I say to you as Joseph said unto his brothers, there's no harm on you today. Go, you're all free. I forgive you for everything. This is his demonstration when he had power to inflict harm that he forgave. And this is very, very important. So, I think it's time for a break. And when we come back from break, I'd like to share more stories and give Islamic solutions to how we look at to be more compassionate practically. So, with that, I think it's a good time for a break, and we'll continue after. Thank you.